Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
I was listening to Jenny Green just now talking about weird dreams, and I've been having some myself, mostly involving Liverpool not winning the league. Nightmare Donica. Today is April 23rd and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Marie, you'll be some bit impressed. We've Dublin football hero Kevin McManaman reliving glory days gone by and yet to come.
Alan Brogan sent in, McManaman dodging.
And we'll revisit the times our sporting heroes lost their tempers.
It's all but wildly out of hand, and once more, Eric Cantona is the man at the centre of a dramatic controversy.
No, we love it. We love it. Days like that are brilliant. Plus, we've Jeff Shepherd on the virtual NFL draft, and we've the latest on soccer returning across Europe. And we ask the question, could it return closer to home?
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Donica, people are getting fed up, I've noticed today, and a lot of sports stars have caught my attention because they've been getting fed up. Arsenal spoke to David Luiz, Alexandre Lacazette, Nicolas Pepe and Granit Xhaka after they were pictured flouting government guidelines on social distancing. But wait to hear what they were doing. So Luiz and Xhaka were meeting up in the park. They were playing a bit of football. Pepe went off playing football with his friends. Lacazette was pictured getting up close to a man valeting his car in his driveway. And they've all had to be disciplined and spoken to by their club.
Oh, what ages.
And they weren't the only ones. Ulster Rugby had to speak to three of their players who were spotted in the same area. Now, in fairness, two of them, brothers, Alan and David O'Connor, live together. Yeah. But they stumbled across Marty Moore in the park.
As you do.
Pictures emerged of them then standing a little bit close.
Wow. It's amazing. I think there is an emphasis on them to lead by example, though, isn't there? I suppose kind of players. But they are trying to train. You could imagine those lads thinking they could go out to the park and play a game. Practice their skills. They are meant to be training, but obviously social distance is important as well.
And you have camera angles, don't get close, far away.
Was VAR introduced in the park? Were they onside, Marie? That's a big question.
Now, I know we shouldn't be laughing about it, no. But it is a very serious thing, and people do need to keep up their social distancing. As we heard there in the news, we are so close to improving our situation here in Ireland, so we definitely need to keep it up. But I do feel sympathy for people, and Kevin McManaman will be on later. He is an athlete, a sports psychologist, and he might have advice for regular Joe Soaps and also athletes who are itching to get out training.
They're all breaking the roots. We've Jeff Shepherd coming on later on from stateside, and Tom Brady has been practicing as well. 41 years of age, probably has a massive gym in his house, personal trainers, but he's getting out to the park in the box to practice. What's going on with sports arts? They're losing the cool.
I thought that was a strange one now. Like, you're right. He'd have everything there. You know, he'd have all the gym equipment in the world, food delivered, anything that he needs. And he still went out to the park. Maybe his garden hasn't been done yet.
I'm
going to
make a call here, Marie. And like, it's harsh coming from a sports person, but is the egos getting to people? You like, do they miss not being seen, not being noticed? People kind of seeing him run the place. Marty Moore hasn't got a backslap in about 6 weeks. People going, Marty, you beauty, you know. Do they need it?
Well, Tom Brady wouldn't really know his teammates yet, so he can't miss them. But maybe it's the, maybe he needs to get out of the house. Like, he has kids. Like, people are getting frustrated in their giant mansions as well.
Yeah, we've Siobhan Doyle coming up later on. We spoke about it in the intro, about just the frustrations, the Cantona moments, the bits in sport where people just go a little bit crazy. And we've seen it even in Australia. Jockey Luke Tarrant has been banned for 6 months, or sorry, 6 weeks for headbutting. 6 months he got, sorry, for headbutting. Imagine a jockey throwing a head in you after a race.
Let me to ask Ruby about that. Did it ever happen to him?
It.
Ruby, if you're listening, 51552. Did you ever headbutt anyone, or did anyone ever headbutt you?
Yeah. I wouldn't cross him.
Yeah. What about you, Donica?
For discipline stuff, no, nothing major. I did. Go on.
It'd be hard for people to headbutt you because you're so tall.
All right. Okay. Yeah. No, I didn't.
And even for you to headbutt anyone, you'd have to...
Headbutting, yeah.
It'd be a difficult one.
No, it wouldn't be something in my armory. I was a good one for throwing a handbag, you know what I mean? A shake, grabbing someone and giving it the, oh, shake them today.
I'm going to get you.
Yeah, Dennis Lima used to slag me. He's there, you never threw a punch, but you were always the one with the jersey and just flapping. So not a bad way to go.
True, true, safe.
Another thing I got a kick out of was Barcelona, thinking of renaming the Nou Camp. Obviously, funds get tight and they're a special club that's kind of owned by the community. But money will get tight now, Marie, and we've seen it with sponsorship and different things. If you have an asset like the Nou Camp, do you go for a naming rights, and what do you go for such a big, big club?
You love this one. Utterly Butterly.
I'd love an Utterly Butterly Park. Or I can't believe it's not the Nou Camp. Something smart. Just people going beyond it. But...
That's the situation that, as you said, clubs, associations, organisations are going to find themselves in, that they're going to have to be innovative, and sometimes, on some occasions, they might have to sell off their prized possessions, and that could be the name to their iconic stadium.
Would you be opposed to, like, stadiums, like Croke Park, big stadiums, having a name?
I do call the Aviva the Aviva Stadium. Yeah. I didn't think I would, but I come around to things pretty quickly.
Yeah, you're there. I never call it that. When are we off to the Aviva?
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, I probably would give out for about a day, but then I'd just come around. Like, if strange times, people are going to have to do what they got to do. And if selling off their naming rights keeps them afloat, then who am I to judge?
It was a fine at the time. I was lucky to be in the environment when it changed from Lansdowne Road to the Aviva. So if you were doing media and you were there, yeah, we can't wait to get out into Lansdowne. Ooh. And you'd be like, no.
Well, you're not supposed to say it.
No, you're always meant to say the Aviva. And then you'd be looking at the journalist kind of going, please don't report that one. Come on, throw me a bone.
Don't quote me on that. That's interesting now.
Yeah.
Good to know. I would have been trying to catch you out if I'd known that.
Nothing, sure. We're all in safe hands. Dahi O'Shea is doing a fitness class. What about that? 20 past two every day, train with Dahi. You can keep your Joe Wicks. Give me a man from Kerry doing fitness training.
I think that's for elderly people.
Still, how bad?
Again, look.
He could be in the shape of his life. Die. Body like Ned Flanders. I've no doubt in it. He's ripped a bit.
Is he outside the door now telling you?
Probably downstairs.
Flog my new fitness show quickly.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
Actually, are you going to be on it? Is that what it is?
Ooh, no, no. But can I plug Too Talented, which are now recruiting for...
I'm going to put you on a 30-second clock here now. You do all the plugs that you need to do.
There you go. Too Talented is now auditioning for people 7 to 11 years of age. TooTalented.ie if you're around the house and would love to take up a new talent with your kids. Marie, you'd be brilliant at it.
Do people send videos in? Is that
yes,
the way it
40
works?
Second video clips okay. To TooTalented.ie. Thanks for actually helping me do this correctly.
No worries. Any other plugs you have?
No, that's it.
We're done for now. Okay. Will we move on to football then?
Absolutely.
So today UEFA opened the doors for playoffs to sort out Champions League spots if seasons are cut short. So I'm sure there's plenty of supporters of teams very curious about this. We are joined on the line by sports journalist Fergal Brennan to talk us through the developments today with UEFA's meeting. Fergal, how would playoffs go down, do you think?
I think they would actually be a bit more positive than a lot of fans might think. I think so many supporters are sick of having nothing over the last couple of weeks that having any sort of football to look forward to, I think, could go down quite well. But that's more likely to come from sides who are fairly sure of how their season's going to end. You know, if you're a situation like a Liverpool or a Manchester City where Champions League qualification is pretty much nailed on, you'd be okay with that. If you're a Chelsea, Manchester United, Leicester, someone like that, you'd be a little bit more frustrated. But I think so many fans are so desperate to see some sort of football again that they'd almost take anything at this stage.
I was a bit worried when I read it first. I thought, are they going to put Liverpool and Manchester City into a stadium and say, look, lads, play off there for the league title in one
Ooh,
match?
You take that, Marie.
I don't know.
Fergal, she's getting nervous.
The fear. UEFA as well today, like you can tell from reading everything that came out of it, that they really want seasons completed, because if they don't get completed, there's a lot of grey area with selection of who goes forward, and they have been very, very clear today that the buck stops with them. They will decide if people have been following their guidelines, Fergal.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things, you know, we've all got used to to new words entering into conversations, social distancing, etc. And sporting merit is going to be the thing that's banded around amongst football fans in the next couple of weeks. That's what UEFA have said in their statement today, that the placing for next season will be decided on sporting merit. Now, UEFA obviously made a career out of vague statements and not really getting to the issue, beating around the bush. But ultimately, what they are saying, without saying it, is the seasons can't be null and voided at this stage. There must be some sort of end, whether that's playing out every single game. In the example of the Premier League, that's 8 or 9. La Liga, Serie A, that'd be 10 or 11, depending on which side you're talking about. But they're ultimately passing responsibility. And in a way, they're passing the buck back to the individual leagues to make the decision. They want to ensure that their competitions are protected. And there's an awful lot of this going on. People are kind of looking to UEFA for guidance on when the Premier League will finish or how it will finish. Ultimately, they don't decide that. That will be decided by the Premier League and by the individual governments in the leagues that they're talking about. Their focus will be on the placing for next season for the Europa League and for the Champions League. But at the moment, there's so many possibilities that I've been speaking to colleagues this morning. Playoffs are something. There's talk of average points. So, for example, if you've won more games than you've drawn, you'd be in a position to jump above. So someone like Wolves would probably slip out. They had that run of draws at the start of the season. Someone like Leicester would probably hang on to their place. They've not drawn many games. They've either won or lost. So there's a huge amount of permutations still floating around, but it's not really been solved by UEFA today. They basically just said, we want you to finish the seasons. It's up to you to decide how that happens.
Fergal, with 55 nations involved in this association, how do you judge sporting merits? Are we going to have unfair or, just something might be agreed for the Premiership or the English leagues and domestic leagues, and then we have something different in the Bundesliga and even here?
Exactly. That's you're exactly right. I mean, 55 people on a video call, anyone that's done a Zoom call or a Skype call would work in the last couple of weeks and tried to get four people on at the same time knows how difficult it is. And I think when you look at the situations, every league's got its own internal situation in terms of what their government are telling them to do and where their leagues are. And I think, unfortunately, in UEFA's eyes, they're focused on England, Germany, Spain and Italy, because a lot of this comes back to money at the end of the day in terms of Champions League and revenue that comes through UEFA. They'll be focusing on those leagues and what exactly is going to happen. Germany have taken the lead in terms of they're the most likely to come back. Domestic football could well be back underway in 2 weeks in Germany. Clubs have been training for the last 2 weeks, building up to coming back on May the 4th. And a lot of countries will be looking at Germany as a bit of a test case of, can that be replicated? What have they done? What measures have they taken? Can that be taken to the English League, to the Spanish League, to the Irish League, to the French League, etc.? But at the moment, it's still so unclear. I think it's going to be very, very interesting if and when Germany do return in 2 weeks. The issue that Germany have at the moment is federal government compared to national government. The national government have kind of given the OK, whereas certain federal governments have said, we'll decide on how many people are allowed in. Something I've mentioned a few times is this assumption that, you can just open the ground and let the lads onto the pitch. That's not the case. You're looking at between 250 and 300 people that need to be in the stadium for a game to take place. And there's certain governments that are not happy with that. They want to bring the number down. So there's still an awful lot to be decided in the nuts and bolts of getting a game back on the pitch.
Fergal, thanks for keeping us up to speed and giving us a new buzzword in sport, sporting merit. I'm going to count how many times I hear it from now on in. Thanks so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Joining us on Game On.
Thanks, Fergal.
No,
Tonica, it's over to Germany.
Oh,
come on, Germany.
Come on, the Germans. Again, so efficient.
We'll be watching them now to see how they get on, because as he said there, they're a test case. So I think teams and clubs all around the world will be seeing how they get on. And no more so than our next guest, Gary Rogers, Dundalk goalkeeper and also chairperson of the PFAI. Gary, we'll be looking to Germany for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All eyes will be on Germany. I think we're all looking in to see how that fares out and seeing if what they put in place will be the strategy going forward,
And just like on your own situation, we're obviously watching and waiting, like I'm sure you are as well. Like, it will come down to government guidelines when any decisions are made. But it must be a frustrating time to be a professional footballer in Ireland with no kind of end date really in sight.
Well, I suppose the end date really at the minute is June, because we haven't been told otherwise. So like, as a professional footballer, that's what we're preparing for. We're preparing that football will take place on the 19th of June. So that's what we have to kind of gear ourselves towards. And so we're training away, although it's not the usual methods that you become accustomed to. We're training via Zoom and we're doing our own runs and stuff like that and uploading them via different apps and that. So, look, we're still kept busy in terms of our training, but we are looking at June at the minute until we're told otherwise. But the one thing that we're pretty sure on is that European football will take place, and that looks like it will be, you know, in August, September time.
Gary, you're perfectly placed to chat for behalf of the players. You know, your time at Dundalk winning five leagues and titles, but also your time with Sligo, St. Pat's. What's the feeling from the players? You know, what are they thinking about getting back to play, and even the types of structure, especially when we chat about things like Champions Leagues with Dundalk?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's frustrating for everybody. I think, you know, no matter what sport you're involved in, I think this is a very strange times. And like even for myself, to be, you know, not to be able to go into training, into dressing room, I think, you know, even yourself, Donegal, you'd be well used to the dressing room, and the atmosphere in the dressing room is always a great place to be. And that's going to change regardless of when we come back to train and play. So all eyes are really on Germany and what they're looking at doing, and even our own kind of governing body here and you know, the HSE. We're all waiting to see, you know, what's going to come out. Like, it's changing week to week and day to day. So we're just hopeful that there will be some sort of football, you know, in the near future.
The potential of games being played behind closed doors, is that something that you'd be in favour of?
Yeah, I think you've got to explore all avenues when it comes to, you know, this is a different scenario than we would have ever dreamt. And you've got to look at all the different scenarios and see, you know, what the possibilities are. It's not ideal. Like, you know, nobody really wants, you know, to go to play football games without an atmosphere. But it may be necessary, you know, in order to build towards bringing crowds back in and coming back to, you know, what we've become accustomed to. So it's certainly something that, you know, I think you've got to explore it in terms of, you know, the costings and for clubs and what revenue can be generated via that stream. So it certainly has to be looked at before you can rule it out.
Because that's the biggest problem, isn't it? The gate revenue is one of the main drivers for many of the clubs. If you lose that type by playing behind closed doors, Gary, you lose an awful lot of the revenue for the clubs.
Yeah, certainly a lot of our clubs are very much heavily reliant on gate receipts. And you know, that's well known, and that's why, you know, people would, you know, be against that. But, you know, you've got to look at how to generate different revenues on the short term. And you can see if the clubs come back with costings to the FEI on what, you know, they generate, their gate receipts would be, and, you know, can we get, say, grants from UEFA or FIFA or government in order to kind of balance it out a little bit so clubs are able to play football and survive in the short term. But also, if you're looking at streaming games, that could be an extra revenue stream when things return to some sort of normality down the line. So, you know, you've got to have an open mind with, you know, games going behind closed doors and what other revenue streams you can open up because of it. Look, we all know we want people at games, and, you know, but I think in this circumstances, a lot of people will understand the reason for going behind closed doors and playing, but it's all down to HSE guidelines and the safety of the players and their families and all the people that are involved in that.
Now, Quinn said today he hoped a combination of paid for streaming games and financial support from FIFA could help the league. You'd have to think there'd be an appetite, you know, especially after this, and if we can't go, that there would be a lot of people who would want to sign up for some sort of package where you get to see football, Gary.
Yeah, you would like to think that there is. You only need to look at probably one of the last games that was played. It was Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers played on the TV. I think a lot of people would like to see games like that again, whether they had to stream them or whatever way it was going to be done. I certainly think, you know, the problem is you will have the Premier League coming back in and they have 8 or 9 games to run, but we're only really kicking off our season, or we're only kicking off our season. So you would like to think there was a lot of games to be played, and you could play games on different days. You could play them towards the Friday, Saturday and, you know, and stagger them so that there's more football, you know, to be freely available, you know, for people to view.
And Gary, just from a personal point of view, like, it's believed that testing players every 3 or 4 days could be on the agenda to get football back playing again. Like, you're a dad of young kids, you know, you have a young family. Is that something that you'd be comfortable with?
Yeah, I think, look, I have a couple of young kids and I've actually another one on the way. So all going to plan. So it'd be an even busier household around here. I think, look, it's difficult. But once you're doing the right things, you'd be hopeful of of that being good enough. Like, we won't be break any laws in terms of, you know, whatever the HSE guidelines are. That's what we'll be adhering to. And I know that, you know, there is plans in place in our club to train in small groups, and we've got the access to 3 and 4 different dressing rooms, so you can keep the players separate and stagger training times and stuff like that. So we are preparing for what could be, you know, the return to football in the near future.
Gary, just on that, like, and I know you're saying you're doing your Zoom training and you're doing runs that are GPS monitored, but you know, in professional sport, it's the quality of the muscle tissue, it's getting rubbed out, it's getting physio. How long, we've constantly fought it out here, how long before you think you could actually be match fit, match ready and sharp, and even safe to play? Your body is properly conditioned to play.
Yeah, well, I think in terms of conditioning, I think lads are working, I suppose I can only speak for our own club at Dundalk, and lads are doing 5 and 6 training sessions a week. And, you know, that's only what's tracked. Lads, some lads might be doing more themselves as well. So, obviously, if there's lads that are injured, our physios are assessing them, obviously, remotely, and keeping an eye on them and trying to get them back to fitness. But it, when it does kind of resume to some sort of small group training and even larger group training, you'd be looking at probably 3-4 weeks of a kind of a mini pre-season to get back into full fitness again. It's not ideal, but it's going to be the same for everybody. So I think that's probably what you'd be looking at, is a kind of more intense 3 or 4 week period of, you know, actual football and games, whether it be at training in your own team or amongst yourselves, you know, to get back up to match speed. It won't be ideal, but that's the scenario you're probably looking at. But in terms of physical fitness, I think lads are doing their best. Certainly, I know from our group that lads are really working hard, you know, to maintain the fitness levels that they'd already built up, you know, to go back into the season.
Gary, I've absolutely no doubt people are working really hard. My greatest concern is actually the quality of players going maybe 6 weeks without getting physio, without getting deep tissue massage, without getting things that are standard in professional sport that actually lead to you playing.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the way we've been doing things recently, you know, over the last number of years, you'd be doing a lot of prehab and stuff like that, and, you know, stretching and foam rolling. So the hands-on rubs that it might be different from sports, but we probably don't be relying as much on the rubs that you're probably talking about. We'd be doing a lot more prehab stuff and, you know, in preparation for training to make sure that we're right for training. And then obviously after training, you're doing some stuff that'd be similar. So you know yourself, we're training there, you could be there for half an hour working out before you actually go out and train, in order to make sure that you're ready for training.
Kerry Rogers, thanks so much for joining us. We're all very excited about football potentially coming back somewhere anyway. We're all going to be watching Germany first, and then hopefully if everywhere is safe, that we will follow soon after.
Thanks very much for having me.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Welcome back to Game On. Maria, I found that really interesting chatting to Gary Rogers there, that soccer players don't get many rubs.
They're probably not in as much contact though as you would have been, so I'm sure you'd have had a lot more reason to...
I can understand it for... You're right, the contact side of it, but just, you know, easing out soft tissue injuries. Like, I'm actually really concerned for... Like, everyone is... The easiest thing to do for athletes at the moment is give them bikes and give them conditioning and tell them get on Zoom and follow classes. But what about the care? What about... You can give them prehab and rehab programs, but what actually about getting physio, getting proper rubdowns? I'm actually worried when we do put our players back on the pitch, we're going to see so many soft tissue injuries. We're going to see so many, you know, kind of things like ACLs. It's something I'm actually concerned about, because the easiest part is training. It's looking after your body afterwards, and players don't have access. When I was listening to Leo last night, I would have been on the phone to move in with either a physio or a masseur or someone to get my body ready for business.
I'm surprised you wouldn't have been on to Jenny to say, can you study a course there in your spare time?
Not a bad call, you see.
What could possibly go wrong? We actually had Enda King from the Sports Surgery Clinic on, and he addressed that very point, Donegal, when you were on holidays. And he referenced the NFL lockout and the increase in ACL injuries when they went back. It went through the roof. So he was making the exact same point as you, that they need to properly ease back into training and get their bodies up to the match fitness and that is required. So you're not alone in thinking that.
There we go.
We've had some really good texts in. This one made me laugh. Headbutted someone by mistake in a college basketball game. Call my own foul and the ref gave out that I call my own foul.
The golden rule, never rat yourself up.
No, I was actually thinking, I was there trying to add in my head during the break how many All-Irelands Kevin McManaman had. And then Brian texted in and told me. Yeah, I was trying to add it back. He has 7. It's impressive.
Not a bad haul at all.
Brian also said that he has 5 National Leagues and 9 Leinster titles. And he's on the line now, so I'm going to see if Brian is right. Kev, how are you?
How's the farm? You well?
Not too bad. So 7 All-Irelands, 5 National Leagues and 9 Leinsters, according to Brian.
Wow.
Correct?
Okay, I'll take his word for it.
It must actually, when you do have a lot of them, it must be hard to keep track of them all. Donica, you probably wouldn't know.
Oh, there you go. It's vicious. But I've no doubt in Kevin, every one of them is accounted and cared for.
Yeah, my mom is the person who looks after them. She has a special spot to stash them all in our house. So whenever I pack it in, I'll have a look in the cabinet, you know.
Yeah, keep adding to them for the moment.
Kev, we're not getting you on to talk about the medals and the football. We might get to it later on, but what we want to talk about is your profession, which is sports psychology, because we were mentioning at the top of the show that a lot of athletes and sports stars we have noticed are starting to get a bit frustrated, get some itchy feet. They're just really finding it difficult, as Gary Rogers just said, being away from the dressing room, their friends, their routine. For people trying to stay focused now for the next few weeks, Kev, what do they need to do?
It's a good question. Like, and it's funny. Like, the big thing that we're finding is this lack of a goal or a bit of certainty of when, you know, I'm thinking boxing here when I say when's the bell gonna ring? Like, when are we gonna get a chance to perform again? So it's become a big challenge. Like, to keep people, you know, keep people ticking over. You know, and the other thing I was thinking is about this kind of roller coaster is like we've all been on a kind of emotional roller coaster since our routine and since the patterns and what we've expected has been taken away from us. So it is, you're right there, it's fairly challenging for athletes.
Kevin, you know better than anyone, as athletes, as players in any game, you set little mini goals, but you need targets, and not to have a target at the moment, you know, not to have a tangible, I'm going to be brilliant at this skill or part of my play on this big day. It's really tough.
Yeah, 100%. And like, I was on a call recently with the GPA, and one of the guys kind of said, "Welcome to retirement," kind of thing. And it just struck me, kind of thinking, "Geez, this is what it's going to be like maybe when there isn't that, kind of sense of purpose." I heard Paul O'Connell talking about it on the Late Late that he missed when he left the game, the sense of purpose. So it's kind of, we have to start figuring out how to give ourselves those little goals and little, what's my accomplishment for the day, and maybe not putting ourselves under too much pressure to fit too much in. I know in the first 2 weeks I was just all over this lockdown. I was saying, I'm going to get all this done, I'm going to do this course, I'm going to read all these books and, you know, improve myself as a footballer. I was working on some hamstring stuff that I was doing, and it's very hard to keep it up at that level. So I've kind of lowered the bar a little bit for myself, and I think trying to give myself little accomplishments every day is important.
You should have a look at the Jurgen Klopp videos. His are very small. They're like learning how to use a dishwasher, make scrambled eggs, tie a tie.
He's a joke show.
Are you serious? Yeah.
But you're so dead right. Like, that seems to be the case with nearly everybody, that for the first few weeks they were mad into it and they were trying to work on different things, and then it started to wane a little bit. But like, with us not knowing and you guys not knowing, how are you managing as a team then, Kev?
The first thing I was thinking was that, like, is to understand why, of course it feels weird. Like, this has never happened before. You know, we're in a complete one-off situation. So we kind of just would connect in groups. How's the form today? Like, how are you getting through the day? How's work and things like that? A lot of people have, you know, work challenges now. My work has gone from 90 to about 10 in no time, you know. So trying to stay connected as much as we can. It's one thing I found. I was 2 weeks in the house on my own. I came home from the boxing Olympic qualifiers in London, and I was 2 weeks on my own. And, geez, I couldn't, I didn't realise how much I love people. You know, I love being around people and that bit of camaraderie and stuff like that. So that's one thing I'm going big after, is trying to connect to people in any way I can, whether it's through Zoom or over the phone, or I've been trying to get down to me ma's front garden and have a chat and see how they're getting on. And I think that's been helping.
I can imagine it. You can just call into all the houses on the way up, Kev. Drive-bys, wave. People will think you're gone mad. The boxers must, like, all the Olympians, really, that must be a tough one, because, like, whatever about focusing on a game or, you know, what's coming up next week or the week after, but one huge event that you'd been building towards or hoping to build towards for 4 years and, like, paused your life almost, to push that back a year, and still we're hearing over the last few days that it's not 100% that it'll even go ahead in 2021. How difficult is it for them?
Yeah, it's massive. Like, and people take these things in 4 year cycles, and you know, I'm sure people have plans to leave the sport, they have plans to, you know, maybe go into full time employment. Boxing is an amateur game, but it's essentially a full time job for a lot of them in terms of how much they train. So finding that, it's a big challenge where they might have to put off college courses, or maybe some people are talking about doing half and half training and trying to still go and find a job that'll look after them and help them, you know, as they try and qualify. But yeah, I kind of feel a lot more for those guys than I do, you know, the GAA or whatever, because we're a lot more insular, you know. We don't have to travel to all these countries all over the world, and where, you know, Ireland might recover better than, you know, a different country, Germany or France or Italy or whatever it is, wherever these guys are travelling. So, look, it is a big challenge. And it's one thing that I say that I've been proud to see how well they're kind of responding to it, you know what I mean? And that's one of our kind of mottos at the minute. The bell's going to ring, and what version of yourself are you going to be when it does, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Everyone's in this, and it's a challenge for everyone. But just for the Dubs, with a change of management as well, how are you managing that, or do you just drive on?
Yeah, just drive on. We had a change of management. Probably a lot of the panel and a lot of the backroom staff aren't too dissimilar from what they were. We're trying to stay in touch with best as we can. We've kind of good, you know, little fun little groups that we have, and little challenges that we try and have every week to try and keep the lads together. But look, it's very hard, and any team and any inter-county player that I've spoken to has gone to one or two hurlers recently how they're doing it. And look, we're all in the same boat. Essentially, the world is on pause at the minute, and, you know, we just have to find a way to come through it as a kind of a tighter group. So it has probably been challenging for the new management, but I'm sure they're well aimed for it.
Kev, for so long now you've been playing with Dublin and consistently performing, and, like, as you said yourself at the start there, this almost feels like, you know, what retirement will be. Is this little bit of a break making you want it even more now?
It's a good question. There's probably things I'm missing more, actually, if that makes sense, than football. Like, you know, I have to say that connection I've found really important for me, and I didn't realise how important it was. But I'm starting to feel, and it's when I'm out on the pitch, like I've a bag of balls there, and I go out on my own and do a bit of kicking, or I've met my brother a couple of times, and we've gone to the park around the corner and just kicked a few shots and stuff, and it does, the bit of grog does come back straight away, and the touch and stuff. So yeah, it's something that I'm really looking forward to, really grateful for. You know, I did an exercise where I just reflected on the last 2 years of my career and all that it's given me. So it is something that I'm trying to embrace. And whenever that time comes, whether it's June, September, November, it could be next year when we get back. But I'm going to probably squeeze as much as I can out of it while I get the chance.
Kev, when I think of you playing football, it's usually doing something amazing in Croke Park, breaking the opposition's heart in the last minute, but it's always in front of a packed house. How would you feel if you were having to perform with nobody there?
It's gas. Like, it'd be weird, you know. Personally, I'd love to play no matter what. It would be very strange playing in Croke Park. You know, I've kind of been in there a few days, even where there was no pre-match before ours, like, and it's just dead, you know. You can hear the birds So look, it'd be strange but we're in strange times, and if it has to be done, it has to be done. I don't want to waste any more time if I can, you know, to get back playing, and if it's safe. The other thing is, even with social distancing, I don't know if you can get it within 2 meters of a Kerry fella, you know what I mean, or a Mayo fella, or a fella from Tyrone. And as backs, they like to be a lot closer than that to me. So whether it'll go ahead anytime soon, I don't know. But look, all going well, and things start developing, and there's cures, and there's a bit more figured out about all this thing, that we'll know a bit more, and we can be a little bit more solid in our decision making.
And Kev, in terms of performance yourself, like, are you a person that feeds off the crowd? Like, do you think that you'd be able to get to that like superstar level if you didn't have the people around you?
That's a good question, actually. Do you know what? Because for the first couple of years, the crowd kind of bothered me, and I would shrink a little bit. But I'm trying to think, do I feed off? Particularly in some of the big games, it does give you a big lift. But I have learned to probably block it out over the years. But it'd be interesting to see. I'd say subconsciously it does give you a massive boost, and the momentum on the field is probably magnified by the roars of the crowd. And there's very few times. I remember in a final in 2013, I remember I came on the pitch against Mayo, and the first thing that happened was Andy Moran scored a goal, and I kind of wasn't in the game, and I've never heard a noise as loud in my whole life. And that kind of shocked me into the game. And I think we scored a goal in the next couple of minutes. Berno got a nice goal, and I have to say I didn't hear it as much when we scored. I was kind of trying to get back in the moment. So it'd be interesting to see if it does affect me. I'm not the one usually that looks into the crowd, or we used to have lads kissing their crest and all when they scored goals. It wouldn't be my style, but it wouldn't look great these days if there was no one in Hill 16, you know.
And what about like going after the Sam Maguire and having no fans there along the way? Like, is that something that you'd be okay with?
Do you know what? It's a question I probably haven't really thought about. I think we play to be the best we can be, to play against the best. Obviously, the crowd adds a bit of tension to it all and makes it a spectacle. Jeez, I don't know. I can't picture it. I can't picture playing for Sam Maguire with 100 people in the arena, you know. I can't picture it.
Yeah, we had to do it one time at Munster against Edinburgh in Murrayfield, and the ball went into the stand, and the ball boy was about 5 minutes looking for the ball, so we actually, David Wallace had to jump over and go get it because he knew where it kicked. It was the most soul destroying, you know. I don't know about yourself, but you do need the buzz, not even that, just to, you know, when you play for where you're from and where you care about, to look into the crowd and actually know people matters too.
Yeah, it's true. And I suppose in terms of from a financial side, I wonder, will they do it? I don't know. But I think with a bit more, yeah, I think as this thing progresses, I think we're going to learn a bit more. Like someone said to me the other day, and I thought it was great advice, said, look back from 10 years on what you're going to say you learned from this time. And I just thought it was really interesting. He said history is going to be written on a page, and whereas there's so much going on and there's ups and downs and there's news every day, but when you think about it, it's going to gradually shift, it's going to gradually change, it's going to be a new normal, and we're going to get out of it. And I don't know, for some reason I found that very comforting.
There's players, Kevin, in all sports that can master the top 2 inches, and you sound like one of those. And one of the hardest parts is selection and being left on the bench. And I've seen players being put on the bench and throw the toys out of the pram and not buy into the team element. That isn't the case with you. Every time you've come on, you've delivered. What's your mindset there when you are subbing?
Yeah, you better ask Jim Gavin if I took it easy after a few of the I suppose I've just learned to deal with it. I've learned over the years that you've a better chance of winning if you put the team before you. I wouldn't say I do it every day of the week, but I do try when game day comes to be as selfless as I can, and to impact as well as I can. Traditionally, that's the kind of name or the type of team you'd associate with my game. And look, I'm happy with it. If that's my impact on Dublin football, that's great. And look, I just do my best. And you know, I know that when players come off the bench, they give the lads who are playing a lift, and that's important as well, like that we do get that feedback that it's not just the management, it's your teammates or your fellow forwards appreciate the bit of energy you might bring or the bit of, you know, impact, whether it's a score or whether it's a change in a tactic or something, that bit you bring off the bench. So I get appreciated for it from team, from players and management and outsiders alike, you know. So I see the value in it, and look, with the success we've had over the years, I know how important it is, so you just have to buy into it, I think.
Well, our texter Brian called you a legend, Kev, so you must be doing something right.
Thanks, Brian.
And just before we go on very quickly, like non-sports people as well as sports people are starting to struggle. Any advice for anyone that is just finding a little bit challenging at the moment, Kev?
Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? It's a good question, because I was only thinking this about myself over the last few days. Well, that bit of self-compassion, like, it's all right if you're not feeling perfect or if you're not a 10 out of 10 today. Like, one of the things that I actually did a class on Zoom on this recently is the three things that we need, and we've probably mentioned a couple of them already in our day to make us feel good, is pleasure, accomplishment, and closeness. And if you can try and get them into your day in some way, so doing something you enjoy, doing something that's a little bit challenging, and it could be doing the garden, could be doing the dishes or getting a bit of work done, and closeness, trying to interact in some way socially to other people. One of the courses I did used to say pack your day, PAC. So that would be my advice to people. If you can, and no matter how you're feeling, if you can do something you enjoy, something that's a little bit of an accomplishment and something that maybe is getting you close to others, whether it's just ringing an old friend or visiting the neighbour and seeing how the form is, I think that's a good step one.
Absolutely. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. Stay well, mind yourself, and looking forward to seeing you back out on the pitch.
Cool. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Kev.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Game on 2FM.
Some things are better in the virtual worlds, and Americans will hope that the NFL draft is one of them. But we know that here on Game On, there's simply nothing better than the original. That's why we're delighted to be joined by the awesome Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great with an intro like that. it's crazy, you know, watching, you know, kind of the preparations for this draft tonight. You know, obviously the NFL... is getting more and more popular, you know, in Ireland every year. And so I would assume there's a lot of people that are definitely going to be paying attention tonight, you know, into the morning, you know, if and when fantasy football comes back. Obviously, you know, there's big ramifications for this. But it's going to be interesting to watch, you know, each of the teams, you know, basically setting up, you know, what they call their, you know, they used to call it a war room, you know, it's where, you know, you have all of the general manager and the head coach and the assistant coaches and the scouts and all that. Well, now it's all virtual. And, you know, you can't have more than 10 people in the room at the same time. And they're going to have, you know, computers, you know, all of the top prospects are going to be set up, you know, prepared to go on ESPN and talk about when they get drafted and all this. It's really going to be interesting to watch and see how all this plays out.
Chef, it's also a marketing dream, though, and we've seen it before. There's kind of the razzle dazzle that Americans do with the sport. How are you going to do that virtually?
Well, I don't know, Donis, because... You know, the initial plans was, you know, this was supposed to be out in Las Vegas. And, you know, the Raiders have just moved from Oakland to Las Vegas. It was going to kind of be like, you know, the big NFL coming out party in Las Vegas. And they were going to have this at a casino. And they were going to have, you know, thousands of people, you know, out there, you know, having fun and partying. And they obviously had to scrap all of that. So they have thrown this together. I think most importantly that they're going to try to get this done without any technical glitches. You know, you want to be able to hear the commissioner make all of the draft selections. You want to make sure that each team, you know, everything's working properly, that nothing's getting sabotaged or there's, you know, no hacking or anything involved like that. And then obviously, you know, again, at the end of the day, you feel good about these players. I mean, they've worked so hard, you know, for the majority of their young lives to get to this situation. And, you know, now you're going to likely see Joe Burrow, LSU's quarterback, go number one as of now. Cincinnati, the Bengals still have the number one pick, but as always, they're starting, the reports are starting to pick up about teams moving to, you know, to try to get into place to maybe make them an offer to move into the top spots.
So that's what kind of goes on. There is an awful lot of trading within it. One quarterback that's been breaking the rules, and myself and Marie were chatting about sports stars that aren't really adhering to social distancing, is Tom Brady, the quarterback, in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's you know, just excited to be, I think, out of New England. He's excited that he's got his best friend Gronk back to play with him now. You know, the Buccaneers and the Patriots worked out a trade where Rob Gronkowski came out of retirement, and they, you know, they traded the pick from Tampa to New England for Gronk, and so they reunited with Tom Brady. And I don't know if you had a chance to see, but they put together a video where Brady, you know, kind of blew into a shell, you know, like a Norseman, and the birds flew out of the trees, and then Gronk, you know, came running up. He was summoned by Brady's call, and so you know, it looks like they're picking up right where they left off with their, you know, their fun personalities and things like that. But I know Brady's just itching to get back to playing football.
Absolutely. What are you most looking forward to in the draft?
So it sounds like the Miami Dolphins are preparing to make a Godfather offer to the Bengals, you know, an offer that they can't refuse. And I hope it doesn't go as far as it did in the movie The Godfather, because that would just be really weird, you know. it'll be interesting to see what type of moves are made. Because, look, there are two ways that teams in the NFL traditionally, you know, build up their roster. You could do it in the draft, or you can do it in free agency. You can make a splash in free agency, but you really lay the foundation for a solid future via the draft. And so there's always the temptation to, do you want to try to trade up a pick from, you know, trade your first round pick this year and next year's first round pick to move up to get a guy this year? Or do you want to stockpile picks, which is really the way New England and New Orleans and the Chiefs have done things in years past? Or do you like to try to just make a big splash, trade three or four picks to go get the guy who is, you know, the number one pick or the one of the top three guys this year? And there are certain teams that, you know, typically operate under that way of doing business. So that's always interesting to see. I think if Cincinnati holds firm at number one, the next move will be, what do the Redskins want to do? They're getting a lot of offers for their second pick. They seem to be sticking with Chase Young, the defensive end out of Ohio State. But the Dolphins are the ones that seem to be trying to position themselves to, you know, get a couple of top 10 picks to then turn around and offer those picks to Cincinnati for number one overall in Joe Burrow. So I think the first hour or so of this tonight, there's going to be a lot of drama unfolding.
Well, Shep, you might keep us up to speed on all of it. Thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great show.
We're going to take a quick break. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Game on 2FM.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined by Siobhan Doyle of RTE Brainstorm, who has again wrote a brilliant article. Siobhan, will you tell us about it?
Thanks, Marie. Yeah, so I wrote an article about hissy fits, tantrums, and sports stars losing their cool on the biggest stages. One in particular that stands out is French legend Zinedine Zidane's headbutt in the 2006 World Cup final. And this is a big match for him. It's going to be the last game of his international career. He had already made history in that game, in that he scored a goal in the first half, and he was only the fourth player in the world to score in two different World Cup finals. But as they went into extra time versus Italy, he headbutted his opponent, Marco Materazzi, and left with a red card, and that was his last match in a French jersey. So certainly not an ideal way to end his illustrious career with France.
Not at all, Siobhan. And there is brilliant sporting highs, but I do miss what you're chatting about, shouting matches, fights, people with massive egos. What's the biggest one that stands out in your article for you?
I think probably Mike Tyson's bite on Evander Holyfield in 1997. And because it was such a big boxing match, you know, as usual, in a heavyweight title fight. There was huge speculation beforehand, and I think the bizarre thing about you know, the infamous incident where Mike Tyson bit off quite a chunk of Holyfield's ear is that the fight went on after that. The ringside doctor determined that Holyfield was able to continue despite the massive bite. And it's after that, Tyson took another bite out of Holyfield.
Siobhan, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm really sorry, we're out of time, but we will tweet out your article. We'll be back tomorrow with Sam Bennett and Dan Shanahan. Tara Stewart is up next.
Live across the nation, this is 48.2 FM.